Log Talk Radio.
Hey, James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective, and we're doing it tonight live. It's Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and Tuesdays and Thursdays we do this thing live on Blog Talk Radio through the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Special shout out to the girls. The Ambers are out tonight, the only officially sanctioned belly dancing group. We're just going to call it in all of podcasting history. Can't think of another time when it's been done. And they're out there practicing the night moves, and we're happy to have them listening. Girls, thank you so much. It's good to be it's good to be there with you in spirit. Whoop it up. No, seriously, it's great to have all your new listeners. Welcome. We've been working not as much as we should, but we've been working on another platform called Spreely, and it was set up by a guy named Todd Littlepage. Hey, girls. And it's all the things that Facebook should have been, used to be, but isn't now because of the censorship tyranny that is homeboy Von Zuckerberg there. Anyway, and we've been getting listeners from over there, so I just want to say I just want to give a shout out to our friends at Spreely. It's nice to have you with us, and we're happy to be a part of that platform, Spreely, over there. Spreely.com, set up like Facebook, very user-friendly, same kind of thing, except without the censorship, without the Facebook jail, without the shadowing, without the surveillance, an honest Facebook, in other words. Okay. Not dead air, just getting a drink. You know, every Tuesday and Thursday, I sit around and I say to myself and others, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. Not the first clue. And I'm not exactly sure that's a really good way to run a radio show. But that's how I've been doing it for a while. And the reason I say this is there's so much crap going on. All right? There's so much stuff going on. And a radio hour, well, here at Blog Talk, it's a legitimate 60 minutes. But in other areas, it's less than that. The work that I do for the people at Talk America Radio, talkamericaradio.org, you need to go there. They have two audio streams, Liberty and Justice Stream, ACP, heard there various times throughout the day and week. Having said that, an hour of radio rhubarb with the old boy here is 60 minutes on Blog Talk. On Talk America, it's 53 minutes, 51 seconds. And that allows time for a spot, you know, and station identifiers and some breathing room in between programs. You just work it. But there's so much stuff going on. And I look at this stuff every day. I look at this stuff every day for you guys. Give, 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 never take. That's me. And I'm looking at all this stuff, and I'm looking at these things. Well, is this worth talking about? Is that worth it? What? And I just try to use my best judgment. Honestly, I do. But it seems now, and I look back when I first started, it was a 30-minute show. And, you know, I really had no clue. And I would do some news, or maybe I would do some commentary, or look at conservative doctrine, breaking down what is conservatism. What does it mean? What are we talking about when we say we're conservative or constitutionalist? And because here's what I think. I think a lot of people are much more center-right than they actually believe themselves to be. And one of the reasons I say that is because, you know, we talk about conservatism, or we talk about constitutionalism, and it seems like this almost otherworldly point or idea that we're trying to get across. And it's really not. It's an old idea. It's been in this country since 1629. It was a Virginia colony, and Plymouth Rock and Rock City, Ruby Falls. You know, it's been here that long. And it shouldn't be. And it is, I'm afraid, to many Americans, this very abstract idea. And it shouldn't be. It should be a very mainstream, it should be a very established idea, because it is as old as the nation itself. And we find it in the Constitution: life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. The rights that are enumerated to us in the Constitution, they don't come from government. We recognize them as coming from God and to be protected and enforced by government. But we're having problems with that now. Another discussion. But when I look at this stuff, and I'm looking at the news, I always try to find things that I think are not extreme, you know, long-haired points, stuff we can all identify with. And some of them are pretty polarizing issues. And one of those issues, and it's been in the news here for a couple of weeks, and it's never far from the American conscience. It's never, ever been very far from the American conscience. And what I'm talking about is, of course, abortion. We saw Governor Ralph Northam, Virginia, and, you know, he's taking, now see, here's the thing. He's taking the heat. All right. Everybody's O-ring got inverted on this thing. Not because of his views on abortion, which are horrific. It is infanticide. That's the policy that he is advocating. No other name for it. And we're not going to call it anything else. Andrew Cuomo, governor of New York, just a couple weeks ago, cheered. Democrats are cheering. They are enthusiastic about this. They were ebullient. They were joyful at the legislation that Governor Cuomo in New York signed into law, bringing abortion up to 15 minutes till delivery. They applauded. Democrats are applauding and advocating infanticide. In New York City, 3,000 black babies are aborted every day. Every day. So now we move from the strata of infanticide to genocide. Dr. Brian Junedef, who is a frequent contributor to American Thinker, had an article about this the other day, and I saved it. It's called Abortion and the Politics of Self-Destruction. You know, it is odd that large groups of people often take political stands seemingly against their best interests. And in the age of Donald Trump, we see this more and more. It is readily apparent. The president has been a strong friend of Israel, and he's moved the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Republican presidents have traditionally been pro-Israel. Barack Obama made a deal to create a nuclear Iran, a country that wants to exterminate Israel. Yet American Jews tend to favor Democrat candidates, with 71% of Jewish voters choosing Democrat candidates and only 25% choosing Republicans since 1968, voting against their interests. The LGBT community is a fellow progressive traveler with radical Islam apologists, despite how gays are treated in some Muslim countries, which are not tolerant of sexual or gender diversity compared to here in America and really most Western countries. They are voting against their interests. There is overwhelming black support for Democrats. According to the Pew Research Center, blacks in 2016 voted for Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump. Get this. By a 91-6 margin. Now, this is despite Trump and Republican economic policies driving black employment basically to better than it's ever been. And that's coming from CNBC. Democrats under Barack Obama gave blacks high unemployment, lots of excuses, yet blacks continue to support Democrats voting against their interests. Abortion, which is a core issue for Democrats, is another area where blacks are supporting a political party which is acting very much against the interests of blacks. Let's take a look at Planned Parenthood and abortion specifically, where the Democrats are advocating for the well-being and advancement of blacks, or are they instead advocating for their destruction. Planned Parenthood started in 1916 when Margaret Sanger opened America's first birth control clinic in Brooklyn. Less well known is that Sanger was a racist and a eugenicist who considered many Americans unworthy of life. And who might one of these unworthy groups be? Her views of eugenics in the 1930s and 1940s led to compulsory sterilization laws in 30 states, ridding the population of what Sanger described as people she considered feeble-minded, idiots, morons. She addressed a Klan rally in New Jersey in 1926, too, that she generated great enthusiasm among some of America's leading racists. That should say something about the content and tone of her remarks. She wrote a letter, Margaret Sanger, in 1939, saying, "We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population." Given the popularity of Planned Parenthood among Democrats and overwhelming support of the Democrat Party among blacks, obviously this word did not get out. And that was then. And this is now. Modern-day Democrats, descendants of the party of the KKK, have become more enlightened and tolerant, or have they? In 2009, Hillary Clinton accepted Planned Parenthood's Margaret Sanger Award, and she remarked, "I admire Margaret Sanger enormously. Her courage, her tenacity, her vision." Going further, she said, "I really am in awe of her, and there are a lot of lessons we can learn from her life." Do those lessons include Sanger's Negro Project, dedicated to the elimination of human waste, yet by almost a 20-to-1 margin, blacks voted for Mrs. Clinton for president? In 2013, President Obama awarded 16 Presidential Medals of Freedom to individuals who have made especially meritorious contributions to the security or the national interests of the United States, to world peace, or to cultural or other significant public and private endeavors. One of the recipients was Gloria Steinem, accepting the honor in hopes that it would reflect the work of Margaret Sanger. Neither she nor President Obama explained which works of Margaret Sanger were being celebrated. The forced sterilization of those deemed unfit, eugenics, Nazis were big on eugenics. The Negro Project, weeding out the unfit. And let's not forget about the late Democrat Senator Robert C. Byrd, who at one time was an exalted cyclops in the Klan and who Hillary Clinton praised as her mentor. She wasn't alone in having racist mentors. Bill Clinton's mentor was Democrat Senator William Fulbright, who fought against school desegregation. Don't forget Democrat Senator Al Gore Sr., who voted against the Civil Rights Act. Last week, we learned about two powerful Virginia Democrats, the governor and the attorney general, both wearing blackface. One may be posed for a photo in Klan robes. I wonder how blacks voted in the Virginia gubernatorial election. It was a Republican candidate, Ed Gillespie, who was accused of being a racist, and the media happily piled on with it. Planned Parenthood and its founder once upon a time had their Negro Project. What about today? Is that project still going on? And who's getting abortions? Tammy from the upper middle class suburbs? Although they make up less than 13% of the female population, black women have 37% of abortions, all abortions. New York, which just passed legislation legalizing abortion up to the moment of birth, aborts more black babies than the number born alive. I'll bet Margaret Sanger must be looking up at New York from wherever she is and smiling. It appears that Sanger's prescriptions for ridding the U.S. population of undesirables is working. One might call it genocide, the deliberate killing of a large group of people based on ethnicity or race. Yet those groups being targeted for elimination continue to support those advocating for the continuing genocide. Planned Parenthood appears to be deliberately targeting particular ethnic minority groups for abortion, supported by the Democrat Party, funded in large part by the government. Might they also be funded by the sale of their products from abortion, from stem cells, the body parts? And in turn,
Planned Parenthood contributes generously to Democrat politicians who make sure abortions are plentiful and common, especially among their minority group constituents. Abortion, unlimited, without restriction and on demand, has become part of the Democrat dogma. Given how many black babies have been aborted since Roe v. Wade, the black population would now be double what it is if those babies hadn't been murdered. Yet blacks overwhelmingly support the political party which advocates for their elimination, or at least strict population control. Theories abound, from racial identity to social pressure to civil rights and the belief that there's no alternative for blacks except the Democrat Party. But in the end, blacks support the political party that has done little for their socioeconomic prosperity and advocates for the abhorrent genocidal activities of Planned Parenthood, which specifically targets blacks and other ethnic minority groups. Almost 80% of all Planned Parenthood abortion facilities are within walking distance of minority neighborhoods. That is some sobering thought right there. Now, since 1973, Roe v. Wade has been the law of the land. That was settled by the Supreme Court. Personally, I believe that issues like this, abortion, should fundamentally be a state's right issue. It should not come under the purview of the federal government. It should come under the purview of the state's governments. And let the individual states make their decisions on this policy. What's the solution? I don't know. I don't know that there is a solution. It's just strange that that's what happened. And again, what we talked about, all those groups have taken stands politically, ideologically, that run completely contrary to their best interests. Go figure. Oh, by the way, 1880, I think, 1890 maybe. On this day, Valentine's Day, Jack Benny was born. Happy birthday, Jack. Funny, funny man. Okay, let's see. Where are we at now? I'm going to have to do some of the snap background. That was a very, very sobering. I guess we probably need to move on to... looks like a border deal is going to be signed, considerably less money than the president wanted, but here's how that's going to play out. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Thursday, today, President Donald Trump will sign legislation to prevent a second partial government shutdown. It's a lousy deal. It's got a lot of crap in it. We have to weed through it. But rather than go through another shutdown, here's what's going to happen. He's going to go ahead and sign the deal and declare a national emergency and go ahead and build the wall. There's plenty of money out there, and they're going to get it. He's prepared to sign the bill. He will also be issuing a national emergency declaration at the same time. The compromise measure keeps departments running through the fiscal year, but without the $5.7 billion the president wanted for the border wall with Mexico. Moments after McConnell's remarks, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders confirmed in a statement that the president will sign the funding bill and take executive action to build the wall. The product of nearly 3 weeks of talks, the agreement provides about $1.4 billion for new barriers along the border. That's less than the $1.6 billion for border security in a bipartisan Senate bill that the president shot down a couple months ago. It's going to take about 55 miles of barricades. So here's what's going to happen. He's going to sign it. Then he's going to declare a national emergency. The Democrats, and it wouldn't surprise me if they at some point find one of their moonbat judges in a circuit court somewhere to issue some kind of restraining order against the president from declaring a state of emergency. I'm not exactly sure what the legal ramifications of that are, but it wouldn't surprise me if one of these fools thought that he had more judicial juice than the president of the United States. Miles of wall, a barricade. It is a start, and it has to start somewhere, and this is as good a place as any. He said he was going to do this. He's getting it done. The sausage making process we may not be that crazy about, but he's getting it done.
Badges. We ain't got no badges. We don't need no badges. I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Hey. You get the idea. Okay, listen. We're down to the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to go ahead and find something for us to listen to, and we will be back after this brief musical interlude here on a conservative's perspective.
best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing, and you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows, you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, boots? Start walking.
Great stuff, Nancy Sinatra there. James Bostic, we're back. Conservative's Perspective here on Patriot Nation Radio Network at blogtalkradio.com. You go to blogtalkradio.com, and or you can just follow the link. And by the way, thank you for listening. New listeners, welcome. All our friends over at Spreely joining in on the fun and festivities. Andy McKay back in the news. He did a thing. He's got a book out now. Yeah. Andrew McCabe, former deputy director, FBI, deep state Hydra operative, has a book out now called Blah, 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 How the FBI Protects America in the Age of Terrorism and Trump, as if, you know, he's part of that cabal. And we'll just go ahead and listen to what the guy has to say. It's an 8-minute clip, and you know how I am, but we got to do it, and that's that. So listen to the guy, and then I got just one thing I'm going to remind you of after he's through.
Extraordinary revelations. In his first TV interview since being fired, the former FBI's former director is telling 60 Minutes why he launched investigations into President Trump. If you remember, Andrew McCabe was a career official at the Justice Department who oversaw the Bureau's investigations into Russia's election meddling and Hillary Clinton's emails. He took over as acting FBI director in May of 2017 after James Comey was fired. In his new book, The Threat, How the FBI Protects America in the Age of Terror and Trump, McCabe describes extraordinary measures Justice Department officials took after Comey's firing. He says he was concerned about the president's possible ties to Russia.
Now, remember last March, about one day before McCabe was scheduled to retire, he was fired by then Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The Justice Department accused McCabe of misleading investigators about sharing information with the media. Now, he denies any wrongdoing, but as a result of his firing, McCabe did not receive his full benefits and is considering a lawsuit. Well, now, in an interview with Scott Pelley for Sunday's 60 Minutes, McCabe discussed a meeting with the president in the Oval Office just hours after Comey was fired.
I was speaking to the man who had just run for the presidency and won the election for the presidency, and who might have done so with the aid of the government of Russia, our most formidable adversary on the world stage. And that was something that troubled me greatly.
How long was it after that that you decided to start the obstruction of justice and counterintelligence investigations involving the president?
I think the next day I met with the team investigating the Russia cases, and I asked the team to go back and conduct an assessment to determine where are we with these efforts and what steps do we need to take going forward. I was very concerned that I was able to put the Russia case on absolutely solid ground in an indelible fashion, that were I removed quickly or reassigned or fired, that the case could not be closed or vanish in the night without a trace. I wanted to make sure that our case was on solid ground, and if somebody came in behind me and closed it and tried to walk away from it, they would not be able to do that without creating a record of why they'd made that decision.
You wanted a documentary record.
That's right.
That those investigations had begun because you feared that they would be made to go away.
That's exactly right.
The White House responded to the opening of that investigation, calling it a completely baseless investigation. But now we're hearing directly from McCabe as he tells his own story with Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes. Scott, good morning.
Good morning.
This is fascinating to see what you've learned in this interview. He was a career FBI professional. This is the first time, however, that he's confirmed he opened that investigation. Why?
Well, it was about 8 days in May in 2017, right after Jim Comey was fired, and McCabe describes a chaotic time, especially at the Justice Department, when questions are being asked whether Jim Comey was fired to obstruct the Russia investigation, and if so, is the president an agent of Russia? There were two investigations, Nora. One, a criminal investigation. The other, a counterintelligence investigation. McCabe told us that he had many reasons to open both of those investigations, and as we just heard him say, he wanted to get those investigations opened so that if he got fired right away, they wouldn't just disappear.
What did he say about friction in the White House after the firing of Comey?
Well, he tells the story, John, of the president repeatedly in meetings and phone calls trying to convince him, McCabe, that everyone at the FBI wanted Comey fired and that everyone was very happy about that. And McCabe talks about the interview, it talks in the interview on 60 Minutes about him telling the president, no, sir, that's not what happened. I'm encountering people in the hallway who are in tears over the firing of Jim Comey. And he says
tears
it was
joy.
At that
they hated
point
the guy.
That
that's
he realized that if he hadn't burned the bridge with the president, he could certainly smell it smoking.
It's certainly a very candid conversation. I've only read an excerpt from the book, but he's speaking very candidly about his feelings for the president and his impression of the president. Was there anything in the interview that surprised you about what he was saying?
Gail, the most illuminating and surprising thing in the interview to me were these 8 days in May, when all of these things were happening behind the scenes that the American people really didn't know about. There were meetings at the Justice Department in which it was discussed whether the vice president and a majority of the cabinet could be brought together to remove the president of the United States under the 25th Amendment.
These
were the 8
days
from Comey's firing to the point that Robert Mueller was appointed special counsel. And the highest levels of American law enforcement were trying to figure out what to do with the president.
And I just want to put a finer point on that, because there has been reporting.
Stop. Just shut up. These people sicken me. Now, as far as Hydra operative McCabe is concerned, it was mentioned really quick in there, and I'm sure you've heard it, that he was fired for misleading Congress. That's disingenuous. He did not mislead. He lied to Congress. And he lied about his actions within the confines of the organization of the FBI itself. So, having said that, as it has been documented in numerous incidents where the FBI, in FBI language, it's
being less than candid. Oh, well, it's, okay. But what does that mean? Well, if he's candid, then he's being truthful. If he is less than candid, he is not being truthful. And at no time ever, ever, ever is an FBI agent to be anything other than candid. He lied. He lied like hell. He lied like a rug. He lied so bad, someone else had to call his dog for him. And now, this washed up, pathetic, thing disavowed by men of principle and honor, rejected because he is no longer of any use to Hydra, is out trying to hawk this book about how he was some kind of super patriot working on saving the country. Let's get this straight. The FBI is a revered and storied organization throughout the entire breadth of the 20th century. But the organization, from an ethical and objective and moral perspective, has become corrupt. It's become compromised. Can it be restored? Yes. Yes. Who was it corrupted by? It was corrupted by men like Andrew McCabe. It's corrupted by men like Christopher Wray, the acting director. It's corrupted by men like Jim Dan Comey and others of their ilk, whose names and faces we may never know or see. Hydra. As we look at this, we'll just go ahead and finish this out. Lou Dobbs, and I tried to play this clip on Tuesday, and I was unsuccessful because what I pulled up wasn't anything near what it was supposed to be. And I'm hoping if I'm very careful, it's here. They've been screaming about this Russia collusion thing, and Adam Schiff, the Schiff head, the Schiffy pants, he's now the chairman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. And, you know, that's what happens when the Democrats win. They take over the chairmanship of the committees. And I'm trying to think who it is. Jim Anderson? No, what's that guy's name? Well, anyway, the Republican chairman becomes the ranking minority member. So it shifts in charge. And John Solomon is talking with Lou Dobbs about how earlier this year, or last year rather, I think maybe it was last summer, Adam Schiff was meeting with Glenn Simpson from Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS, the incubator through Brian Steele and all that rigmarole of this manufactured intelligence product, this dossier, which is what's driving everything that was never real in the first place. Lou Dobbs.
Joining us, award-winning investigative reporter John Solomon, opinion contributor for The Hill. John, good to have you with us. Great reporting.
Great to be with you, Lou. Thank you.
As always, let's start with first today. The reporting that Schiff and Reynolds were Simpson were together in Aspen. How much should we make of it?
Well, if you remember, a couple of years ago, Democrats made a very big point of the fact that Adam Schiff, Devin Nunes, exercising his normal oversight authority, went to the White House to get some facts, something we didn't see a lot in the hearing today. But he went to the White House to get some facts about unmasking, and then Adam Schiff called him on the carpet, said it was corrupt, it ruined the integrity of the investigation, forced Devin Nunes to go through an investigation and temporarily recuse himself from the Russia probe. Well, now we have Adam Schiff engaging in the same behavior he was excoriating. He meets with Glenn Simpson, one of the most important fact witnesses of the entire Russia case. He's the intersection of the Clinton campaign and the Justice Department, Bruce Orr, Christopher Steele, Hillary Clinton, all connected through him. And he has this contact, and he doesn't tell the committee. So if it was good for the goose named Nunes, it should have been good for the gander named Schiff, and that didn't happen. He didn't notify the committee, and you're starting to hear Republicans raise heck about it.
Well, they're going to raise heck, but they've been doing that for really 2 years, and never came close to raising hell, which is really what is necessary to defend this president and to defend truth itself. You were talking about Devin Nunes, who's, I think we all agree, a hero in this this sordid, monstrous witch hunt that's been conducted against the president. But we also have to bring into play the name Paul Ryan, because he is the one who played games with Schiff and let him drive that narrative in the face of evidence that Nunes had collected that substantiated his views and positions on the president throughout. Correct?
Listen, there was an evolution at the very end of Paul Ryan's tenure as Speaker. I think he very late in the process. I think at the beginning he thought Devin Nunes and Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows were off on some goose chase. And I think very late in the summer and into the fall, I know I talked to him about it. Mm-hmm. He told me directly for the first time he believed there were FISA abuses. He wasn't a believer in that. But as more and more evidence came through, as his lawmakers were more determined than he to get to the truth, he finally came around to that position.
Well, I am a trusting and open-hearted soul. I think that Paul Ryan was lying to you throughout, as he lied to his entire conference and to this president throughout. Yeah. He betrayed them and, in my judgment, the country. There is absolutely no excuse for his conduct and his willful betrayal of this president. Let's turn to further the idea that Special Counsel Mueller that you reported goes back to 2002 and the way in which he was acting without integrity and permitting those with him on his team to do so in flagrant violation of the regulations for FISA surveillance warrants.
Yeah. So this is a very important story for one reason. If you remember when Devin Nunes and Jordan and Meadows, all those guys started raising questions about the FISA, people like Rod Rosenstein and James Comey said, there can't be any abuses. There's such a process in place that catches everything.
Right.
You don't appreciate how much work we put into it. Well, guess what? That process allowed 75 FISAs between 1999 and 2002 to be submitted to the FISA court with false, inaccurate, or omitted information. The very same allegation that we now see in the Carter Page FISA of 2016. So it really debunks a lot of those the trust us concerns, trust the process concerns. Those processes only work if people tell the truth in those documents. There's a pattern in practice before 2016 of that going on during Director Mueller's term as FBI director, and now there's that same pattern in practice in the Carter Page FISA, and that's what should concern all of us. Listen, Donald Trump's a very powerful man, but what about all the people who don't have his lawyers, don't have the congressional oversight? This could be going on daily to everyday Americans. That's why it's so important to stay focused on it.
Without question, and indeed, with a president who is being subverted by that very process and becomes the first president to our knowledge to ever be spied upon by his own national security agencies, including that, of course, of the FBI.
Right.
Do you think that there will ever be any accounting for those abuses?
Yeah, I think the first thing that's happening, and there's a very big moment this week, and I know you've seized on it, but not many people have. Richard Burr, Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman, came out and said what Devin Nunes said a year ago, two separate committees, two different chambers. There is no evidence of collusion. Getting that off the table allows Washington, official Washington, to begin to focus now on, well, how did we get that narrative? Who made that false story? Mm-hmm. What went on? What abuses occurred in the FBI? And I think that moment, that tipping point has arrived. And I think with the Inspector General's report coming out soon and a new sheriff in town named Bill Barr, the new Attorney General, mm-hmm. I think you'll see some real accountability in 2019. I'm hearing a lot of things behind the scenes of that accountability beginning to set up.
Well, it would be a wonderful thing to behold and to witness. You mentioned the narrative that has been driven here. One of those people obviously driving it was the ranking member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Richard Burr, sitting right next to him, and that's Senator Mark Warner. His role in all of this is complex and I think deserves great examination. Do you agree?
I agree. If you remember back in the summer, I had a story where Mark Warner was secretly communicating before a lawyer with a Russian guy named Waldman, back channel, trying to get information back and forth to the FBI director. Very weird behavior, just like the weird behavior we see with Adam Schiff not having a radar and not staying away from Glenn Simpson at Aspen. I think the big problem for Warner and Schiff is when all these facts come out and the president declassifies all those documents, and I know he will. Their statements of the last 2 years are going to be compared to the final facts of the Mueller investigation and the declassified documents. And I think some people are going to have some serious explaining to do.
Right. You even a few members of the Lilliputian radical Dems on the House Judiciary Committee, they've got some explaining to do as well, I think. And certainly their performance today, one would think, would require an apology. John Solomon, you get the last word here.
Well, I was going to say, I just talked to someone as it's coming in the building here that, you know, there's a fine line between oversight and overreach, and I think you saw that line get crossed a few times in the hearing today. We did get some useful information, but we saw a lot of bad behavior. That's not the behavior that American public wants. They want to see what President Trump did on the State of the Union address, act like an adult.
Now, the thing here, did you see the thread that he's talking about? Now, the crux of this whole thing, as there are many linchpin issues on it, has to do we might have to go into emergency overdrive and go into extra minutes here. I'll see, try and wrap it up the best I can. The pattern here, what they're talking about is these FISA applications, these spying warrants to eavesdrop on the Trump campaign, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of these judges. All right. They were doctored. They were ponied. They were falsified. They were fraudulently submitted to judges who astonishingly saw nothing wrong with them and signed off on them and allowed them to do this. But the pattern was it went on beyond this stated time. It's egregious enough that it happened in this example that we have of the four FISA warrants that were enacted against the Trump campaign, the surveillance campaign that went on. But there are other examples, and those other examples go back to when Jim Comey was head of the FBI, back before Trump was running for president. He had been busted by a FISA court judge, Comey had, for sending this crap. Once this particular judge found out about it, he called Comey in and reamed him out. 75 different instances where this happened. On flawed evidence, on corrupt evidence, on manufactured evidence. So what's this tell us? Well, this tells us that the head of the FBI, Jim Comey, at that time from 2016 and on back, and the people that were in there today, that includes Andrew McCabe, that includes Christopher Wray, and that includes whoever their counterparts would have been in the Justice Department, they're rotten and corrupt. It is not the field agent, the guy out there working it every day. It's not the rank and file guys. It's the upper echelon types. That's where the Hydra is. Through those nameless and faceless bureaucrats that run these organizations. So what Solomon's saying is that this corrupt behavior has gone on for a long time. GPS Fusion was at the center. It was the, you know, the, like I said, the incubator for this information that came from Hillary Clinton. I can tell you the whole story, but not in 3 minutes. That came from the Clinton campaign with money that was laundered by the law firm of Perkins Coie to Fusion GPS. And then it was sent to this disgruntled, Trump-hating, washed-up MI6 operative, Brian Steele, who got it in his head that they were going to slam-bang all this stuff together. He was going to go over to Russia and make some specious yet apparently seemingly verifiable contacts within the neither regions of former intelligence operatives in Russia and active members of the government. And he's going to throw a bunch of money at him, and he's going to say, you guys remember when Donald Trump had those hookers in Moscow and had them pee on the same bed that Barack Obama slept in, right? And he's winking at him, and he's throwing dollar bills at him. Oh, yes, 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 we remember. Yeah, this is a good time that night. And then he says, well, you know, these guys tell me that they had a good time that night, and that's exactly what happened. And then it's manufactured. It's sent back to Fusion GPS. It comes out in this final product that somehow winds its way through Hillary Clinton Hydra operatives at the State Department. To the FBI and to the public. I mean, there's a lot of red herrings in here, and again, Hydra. Enough said. ACP is hurt. Twice a week, live right here at Blog Talk Radio on the Patriot Nation Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com. That's where you go. Also, we're heard on the Talk America Radio Network, talkamericaradio.org. You go there, and you can lock it into either one of the streaming channels there. They have the Liberty and the Justice stream. ACP heard on either one of those various times throughout the day and the week. That's all we got. We'll be back next Tuesday looking at things as we do through a conservative perspective. God bless you. God bless America. Check us out at Facebook. Talk America Radio, West Virginia.